You're listening ad-free on Wondery Plus. It's the evening of September 6th, 1791, in Prague, the capital of Bohemia. On stage at the Estates Theater, 35-year-old Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart sweeps his arm with a flourish from behind a harpsichord. Every eye in the orchestra is locked on him, straining to keep pace. And at last, Mozart brings the music to a crashing end. Silence falls in the auditorium. Mozart pushes back his chair and rises, ready to bask in the crowd's adulation, just as he has countless times before. But instead of thunderous applause, a stunned quiet settles over the theater. Mozart hesitates, then bows. 4 years ago, in this very theater, Mozart premiered the opera Don Giovanni, and then his work was met with rapturous applause. But today's opera has fallen flat, and the audience's reaction stings. Head bowed, Mozart makes his way off the stage. He passes the Queen of Bohemia's box, and the snickering laughter coming from it makes Mozart's cheeks burn. Humiliated, Mozart quickens his pace and slips away, determined to return home to Vienna as soon as possible. To many, the lukewarm debut of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart's La Commedia di Tito will be seen as proof that the former child prodigy has lost his touch. But although he has fallen on hard times recently, Mozart has one more operatic masterpiece to give the world. He's been working on another composition, and this one is much closer to his heart. And before the month is out, it will astonish audiences and redeem his reputation when The Magic Flute is first performed on September 30th, 1791. From Noiser and Airship, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is History Daily. History is made every day. On this podcast, every day, we tell the true stories of the people and events that shaped our world. Today is September 30th, 1791, Mozart's last opera. It's January 1791 in Vienna, Austria, 9 months before the lackluster premiere of La Clemenza di Tito. Inside a newspaper office, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart leans over a scrap of paper, scrawling a brief note. Once finished, he slides it across the desk and asks how soon his advertisement can run. The clerk scans the words, counts them, then looks up at Mozart without a hint of recognition. He merely says it'll be printed in tomorrow's paper. Mozart digs into his pockets, fishing for coins, and after carefully counting out the exact amount, he places the money on the counter. Then he leaves before he can change his mind, because this isn't an announcement for one of Mozart's musical performances. Instead, it's an ad to sell his beloved chamber organ. For the last three decades, Mozart has dedicated his life to music. He burst onto the scene at the age of just five when his music teacher father arranged a series of concerts in the royal courts of Europe to show off the astonishing talents of his son. But even though Mozart became a sensation, his childhood as a touring musician often saw him live in cramped and dirty conditions. Mozart's financial position didn't improve much when he came of age either. In his 20s, he became a musician for hire, composing and playing music for wealthy patrons, including kings, queens, and nobles. But even though Mozart charged a premium for his services, his high rates were more than matched by his expensive tastes. For several years, he only just kept his head above water. But when war broke out in Austria in 1788, Mozart's patronage dried up. His income plummeted, but his spending did not. And now, after falling into deep debt, Mozart has been forced to take the drastic step of selling some of the instruments his livelihood depends on. Leaving the newspaper office, Mozart trudges back home to a modest house where he lives with his wife and two children. There he finds a young student waiting patiently outside, and Mozart's heart sinks. Like his father before him, Mozart now teaches music to make ends meet. The parents of this young child have sent him to Mozart in the hope that he'll become the next child prodigy. But Mozart knows the truth. He must spend the next few hours listening to the boy hit all the wrong notes. And that will prevent Mozart from doing what he loves most, making his own music. When the lesson finally ends, Mozart grabs his coat and slips out the door with barely a word to his family. Night after night, Mozart escapes to Vienna's taverns, drowning his sorrows in drink, complaining about how his life has turned out. But all this beer and wine will only waste money that should be going toward paying off Mozart's bills and debts. Still, it's during one night in a beer hall that Mozart rediscovers his passion for music. While drinking with theater impresario Emanuel Schikaneder, Mozart's creative spark flickers back to life. Over drinks, Emanuel outlines his idea for a Singspiel, a type of opera that blends music with spoken dialogue. That makes the story easier for audiences to follow compared to traditional operas, which are entirely sung. Mozart has spent most of his life playing privately for royalty and aristocracy, so the idea of making something for the masses is an appealing one. So soon, Emanuel and Mozart agreed to collaborate on a new project. Over the next few weeks, Emanuel and Mozart work on the fantastical tale of a young prince and his quest to rescue the imprisoned daughter of the Queen of the Night. To defeat the forces of evil, the prince uses magical instruments, and that gives Emanuel and Mozart the title of their new opera, The Magic Flute. But for Mozart, the story is only half the battle. Whether the magic flute succeeds or fails will come down to one thing and one thing only, its music. Mozart is determined that this new work will have vocal performances and orchestral compositions that outdo any opera he has worked on before, because he's decided that the best way to get out of his financial hole is to put on the greatest show he's ever written. But even while working on the magic flute, Mozart's noble patrons will continue to demand new compositions from him. And soon, the overworked Mozart will find himself burning the candle at both ends. He'll have to toil relentlessly to satisfy both his benefactors and his own ambition, because if he doesn't, the magic flute will never reach the stage, and Mozart's debts will never be paid. It's July 8, 1791, in Vienna, Austria, several months after Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart began work on the magic flute. From a small house near Emanuel Schikaneder's theater, piano notes drift through the summer air, because inside, Mozart is hard at work on a new composition. A few weeks ago, Mozart earned his first commission in some time. A grieving aristocrat offered a princely sum to compose a requiem commemorating the life of his wife, who had died at the age of just 20. Mozart accepted without hesitation, and now he's racing to get the piece finished quickly so he can concentrate all his efforts on the project he's more eager to work on, his new opera, The Magic Flute. That's due to open in September, so Mozart doesn't have much time if he's going to finish both pieces. But a knock on the door suddenly interrupts his creative flow. Mozart rises from his stool, opens the door, and is greeted by the sight of a royal footman. As a veteran of countless court performances, Mozart immediately recognizes the coat of arms on the man's regalia as that of the Kingdom of Bohemia. The reason for the royal visit quickly becomes clear, too. The new King of Bohemia has requested that Mozart write a new opera to be performed as part of the celebrations for his upcoming coronation. Mozart smiles, but ruefully. Considering his financial situation, the offer of work is welcome, but the tight deadline is a problem. Mozart will have only 2 months to write an entire opera from scratch, and he's already buried in the Requiem and the Magic Flute. Still, Mozart can't turn down such a lucrative payday, and the footman returns to Prague with Mozart's letter of acceptance. So to make as much time as possible for his now trio of assignments, Mozart settles into a grueling rhythm. He wakes at 4 a.m. every day and works in his studio until long after dusk has fallen. His heavily pregnant wife bemoans the endless noise of composing that keeps her awake, but with three projects to deliver in an incredibly short space of time, Mozart insists that he must work every hour he can. But of the three projects, only one fills him with joy, the magic flute. Every evening, his collaborator Emanuel visits Mozart, and the two discuss the new opera at length. Both are members of the Freemasons, and they embed Masonic symbolism into the work. It leans heavily on the repetition of the number 3, a sacred number in Masonic teaching. And the villain of the piece is a thinly veiled attack on one of the Freemasons' fiercest critics. But the magic flute is not the first of Mozart's assignments to be finished. 3 weeks before the opera is to open, Mozart travels to Prague, the capital of Bohemia, to unveil the music he's composed for the new king's coronation. but the debut of La Clemenza di Tito falls flat. The audience sits unmoved, and a humiliating silence settles over the auditorium when the opera is over. Critics suggest that Mozart has lost his touch. Even the Queen of Bohemia expresses her disappointment. And when La Clemenza di Tito is performed for a second time, so many seats are left empty that the theater owner asks local officials to cover his losses. Still, Mozart doesn't have time to dwell on this embarrassing failure. Instead, he throws himself back into composing The Magic Flute, now due for its own premiere at the end of the month. But taking on so much work in such a short space of time has taken its toll on Mozart. Concerned friends and relatives notice that he's always tired, and after becoming worried about Mozart's pale complexion, his wife even summons a doctor. He gives Mozart strict orders to rest, but they're ignored. Mozart cannot afford to stop work now, so he continues, and it's only with a day or two to spare that he finally finishes The Magic Flute, and then he jumps straight into rehearsals with the theater orchestra. The new work may now be complete, but the pressure is on to put on a real show. If The Magic Flute is a hit, Mozart's status as one of the greatest musical talents of his age will be confirmed. But another misfire will see Mozart's legacy tarnished, commissions dry up, and his financial outlook damaged beyond repair. It's September 30th, 1791. At the Theater Auf der Wieden in Vienna, Austria, a few days after Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart finished composing The Magic Flute. As music fills the auditorium, Mozart can't help but smile from behind his harpsichord. For the last 3 hours, he's been utterly absorbed in the first performance of his newest work, and now, with a finale approaching, he can feel an atmosphere of triumph building. 3 weeks ago, Mozart was in a similar position, on stage for the debut of a new opera. That time, the audience was left disappointed. But tonight, there's no mistaking the difference. Even with his back to the auditorium, Mozart can hear gasps and murmurs of delight as they react to the music and story. And from his bench, he catches glimpses of the elaborate staging that his friend and co-creator Emanuel Schikaneder has devised. Special effects conjure up smoke-breathing dragons. Flying machines move the cast around the stage as if they were enchanted by real magic. And after weeks buried in sheet music, this is the first time Mozart has seen Emanuel's stagecraft with his own eyes, and it delights him just as much as the audience. So when the final notes fade away, the theater erupts. Mozart rises, and Emanuel steps from the wings to stand beside him. The two men step to the front of the stage and take in the lengthy and well-deserved applause. Over the next few weeks, the success of The Magic Flute only grows. Every performance is sold out, and even Mozart can't stay away from his new opera. Whenever he can, he returns to the theater to watch and listen. Sometimes he slips into the audience, where he tries to remain anonymous. Other times, he watches from the wings. But Mozart will not be around to see the end of the opera's run at the Theater Auf der Wieden. At the end of November, the long hours that Mozart spent working on The Magic Flute and his other commissions will catch up with him. His health will collapse, and after spending 2 weeks confined to bed, he will die on December 5, 1791. Despite living for just 35 years, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart will leave behind an extraordinary body of over 800 musical works. Among them will be several masterpieces, The Marriage of Figaro, The Jupiter Symphony, and the Serenade Eine kleine Nachtmusik. But in the eyes of many, standing above them all, will be Mozart's final and favorite opera, The Magic Flute, which received its premiere on September 30, 1791. Next on History Daily, October 1, 1964, in a symbol of Japan's astonishing post-war economic recovery, the world's first high-speed passenger train departs Tokyo. From Noiser and Airship, this is History Daily, hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham. Audio editing by Jake Sampson. Sound design by Molly Bond. Music by Thrum. This episode is written and researched by Owen Paul Nichols, edited by Scott Reeves, managing producer Emily Burke. Executive producers are William Simpson for Airship and Pascal Hughes for Noiser.